opportunity to...
Thank you, Helene, and thank you all for coming this afternoon. I'm really pleased to be here. And I'm going to spend a few minutes talking about the utilization and cost of dental care for people living with HIV. I think David did a great job with providing an overview of the funding streams, both real and imagined, for oral health care for people living with HIV. And given that the Affordable Care Act does not cover oral health care for adults, and given that the Ryan White program can cover it, but its future is a little bit up for grabs, and given that state Medicaid programs seem to be dropping coverage of oral health benefits, it's really important that we get a handle on what it takes, what it would cost to hang on to what we've got and to advocate for what is needed. So that's what I want to spend a few minutes talking about today. I'm going to be presenting data from the SPINS Oral Health Initiative, which was funded by HRSA from 2006 to 2011. They funded 15 programs around the country to expand access to oral health care. 8 of them were in rural locations and 7 were in urban locations, a variety of different service models. And this map just shows you where they were located, pretty much on the edges of the United States. And they funded the Boston University School of Public Health to be the evaluation and support center, and we worked with David and Helene and a couple of other dentists to really provide some of the technical assistance to the different sites. So the eligibility criteria for people enrolling in the study part of this initiative, where they had to be, people had to be at least 18 years of age, HIV positive, and out of oral health care for the prior 12 months unless they needed some sort of emergency care. And over 2,000 people living with HIV who met these criteria enrolled in the study as well as in oral health care. And it's really the largest sample of people living with HIV in any kind of dental study since the Hyksos study of the late 1990s. So once again, we had a little overlap on some of our slides, but the results of the initiative, most of them are published in this supplement. And you can get copies of the baseline results and up here afterwards, as well as an article that David and Helene and I wrote on financing care, the Surgeon General's remarks, and a few other things, as well as you can access the entire journal supplement, and the URL is actually in the handouts that were uploaded on the APHA website. So you can get all of that there. But what I'm going to talk about today isn't in this public health reports document. It's actually in this document, which we also have copies of up here, which is the cost and utilization study that we did. So over the course of the study, 2,178 people enrolled in the study. And these patients made over 15,000 clinic visits. So they had approximately, on average, seven visits per patient. They received over 37,000 services, and a little less than half completed their phase one treatment plan. We followed everybody in the study for at least 12 months and some of a smaller portion for 2 years. So that's kind of who was enrolled in the study. And one thing I wanted to mention is that in this study, 375 people actually came in for one visit and never came back. So we call them the ones that got away. And I'm presenting data that's all about averages, so you've got to remember that in this average, we've got a whole bunch of people. I said on average people had 7 visits. Well, 17% only had one visit, so others had more. But this is what happens in the real world as well. I mean, this was not a randomized controlled trial. This was really based on real people getting dental care, and I'm sure that those of you that have practices know you have plenty of patients that come in once, maybe they have a problem, it gets taken care of, and that's it. You don't see them again, and that happened in the study as well. So just a little bit of a description of what some of the services that they got. You can see even the folks who only came in for one visit, they received some diagnostic services because 98% of the people got some kind of diagnostic care. And most people got some preventive care, cleanings and fluoride treatments and patient education, and about half got fillings as well. And then the other services were received by less than half of the people who enrolled in the study. So what does it cost to provide this care? Let me turn to the real meat of the subject. Getting to the bottom line, what does it cost? And that depends on a couple of things. It depends on what level of coverage you offer. What are the services you provide? It depends on, mm-hmm. whoops, There we go. The price that you pay for any given service. So what do you pay for it? It depends on how many patients are new to dental care. They haven't been around in a while. And how many of them are currently engaged in care. And it also depends on what other resources are available, Medicaid, private insurance, and foundation funds. I'll talk a little bit about the pricing methods that we developed for this study. First, we used the utilization data that 14 of the 15 sites gave us utilization data for all the patients that they served. And they gave us the CDT codes for every service they provided. Then we grouped the sites according to the services, the level of services they provided. Some of them provided basic care. Others were more comprehensive, had intermediate care, comprehensive care. I'll come back to this in a minute. We didn't collect cost data directly. We used three different fee schedules. We used a very low-cost fee schedule from Florida Medicaid. So Florida Medicaid reimburses at a very low level. We used a sort of intermediate fee schedule, which was Delta Dental and Guardian, a combination of their fee schedules. And then we used a higher level fee schedule, which was the ADA, usual and customary fee schedule. So we had three different fee schedules. And we applied these fee schedules to the services that were provided during the first 12 months of care for everybody who enrolled in the study at the different levels of coverage. And then we did the same thing for the second 12 months because we wanted to see did the costs go down for people after they'd been enrolled in care for a year. Are people following me so far? Okay, let me talk for a minute about the three different levels of care. The reason why this is important is that some of the sites provided comprehensive care, every service you can possibly imagine, while others just did basic care, preventive care, a little bit of restorative care, non-surgical periodontal care, and diagnostic services, and then some were sort of in the middle. And when you're doing these kinds of cost calculations, you're doing it on a per-person basis, and if you only had eight sites that were providing crowns and endodontics and bridges, you didn't want your denominator of patients to include the patients from all 14 sites. So we had to group the sites into the level of care that they provided. So these are the three groups that we had. And now I'm going to turn to the average cost per person in the first 12 months of treatment. Ta-da. There we go. So we look at comprehensive care. If you use the Medicaid fee schedule, it would have come out to $603. If you use the Delta Dental schedule, it would have come out to $1,271. And if you used ADA, usual and customary, it would have come out to $1,829. Then go over to the other end of the spectrum. If all you provided was basic care, using the Medicaid fee schedule would have been $217, the Delta Dental schedule $541, and the ADA schedule $833. So you see it's a huge wide range of what it costs to provide dental care to people living with HIV, from a low of $217 to a high of $1,829. And the difference would be based on what decisions you make about what you're going to cover and what prices you're going to pay. And this gives you an idea of what the average cost per person is for providing each of the different categories of service over the first 12 months of treatment. This breaks it down a little bit further. And it shows that out of the $1,271 that it would cost if you provided comprehensive care using the medium fee schedule, nearly a quarter would go for removable prosthetics. And that would include partials, dentures, and their repair and maintenance. And almost another quarter, would go for restorative care. A whole lot less for things like fillings, 16% for fillings and 9% for crowns. Diagnostics are only 12% of the cost, and preventive care, cleanings and fluorides, are just about 5% of the costs. So I know that people have seen this from these charts from time to time, and they go, crowns, $112, it costs a lot more. For a crown, but it's only 6% of the patients who received crowns. So you spread it out among all the patients that were in the study, and the cost per patient across all of them was $112. I don't know if that makes sense. People following it? Okay, so now let's take a look at what happened in year two. After the first year of care, most of the people moved into the maintenance mode if they weren't there already. As a result, the cost of care was cut by over two-thirds for all levels of care. And the difference in the cost for different levels of care is much smaller. Presumably, many of the more expensive services were provided in the first year. So, for example, at an intermediate level of care, using the medium fee schedule, we go from nearly $1,000 per person to $237 per person. And this just breaks it down a little bit more and shows the difference from year one to year two. You'll see that there's a much smaller difference when you look at preventive care, periodontal care, and some of the adjunctive care, which is mostly consults, than there is for some of the other services. So a few things to think about. It sort of depends a little bit on where you sit in the policymaking and provider side of things, but you need to think about who are your dental providers in your community. Are they community health centers? Are they university clinics, private practices, HIV clinics? Are they what kind of fee schedule will they accept? Would they be willing to accept a Medicaid fee schedule or able to? Or would they require a much higher level of reimbursement? What's the trade-off between depth and breadth of coverage? In other words, you want to provide preventive care, basic cleanings, restorations to everybody, or do you want to provide a more comprehensive level of care, and would you be able to afford to do that for everybody? Who are the other payers in your community? Do you have Medicaid coverage? And geographic considerations. Are you looking at a rural area with huge distances and very few providers, or are you looking at an urban area that may have fewer barriers to care with a lot of dental schools and so forth that are used to being more safety net providers? But the bottom line is that providing dental care to people living with HIV really won't break the bank. And there are tools to figure this out, and it's well worth the cost of figuring out how to do it.